Thank you very much indeed, Jan, and thank you all of you for inviting me. Not all of you invited me, but anyway, for acceding to that. I was very touched to be invited. I was touched last year because I thought either it shows something about the SBS staff that then have to push out to the frontiers to invite me. But to be invited twice is a great honor, and I really am touched because Jan is right. This is my last, probably my last address to undergraduates while I'm in post as a professor. I'm staying in Cambridge. I'm going to be in King's for until I disappear, and I'll tell you a joke about that at the end. But I don't want to burst into tears at this point, so I won't. But basically, I've spent a lot of time with your predecessors and then with you in some lectures, and that has been one of the greatest pleasures. When people ask me what it's like to leave, the only thing I can compare it to is either when I left home or when my own children left home, that mixed feeling of great relief that one had survived up to that point without any particular disaster, and sadness that a particular old order had changed, giving place to new. And so it's ambivalent feelings. I will be, as I say, in King's, and I also am starting a big project to try and protect and save the culture of disappearing societies around the world through film and so on in the museum. As I joke, if you're an old anthropologist and turning into a fossil, where better to go than to the Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology? So I will be in a glass case somewhere over there. Anyway, enough of that. The first thing I wanted to say was just to wish you all success, and not to mention the E word. But anyway, I hope it all goes well later in the term and for the rest of your careers. When I was thinking about what to talk about, I thought, well, yes, May 1st, I could talk about May Day, and now is the month of May, or I could talk about socialist May Day, and so on. I decided to do something entirely different, which may or may not be interesting to you. I just thought I would rather selfishly take this opportunity to tell you a few useful things about life. In other words, what I've learnt. We'll see how far I get. I've got 20, but I think I'll only get through a few of them. I'll put the rest on YouTube for you later. The first useful tip was from a philosopher in this college, Bertrand Russell. I think I may have told you this, but Bertrand Russell said, the greatest invention of the modern age is, any of you guess? Which? I'm deaf, you'll have to say. Silence. What was it, Freud, did you say? No. Okay. A suspended judgment. It isn't a modern invention, actually, but what he meant is that we live in an open world where you don't have to make up your mind straight away about anything. And that is quite a useful thing to know. I operationalize this, and this is my tip to you. Get yourself a pending tray. Both a mental pending tray, so certain things you can put into it, but also a physical pending tray, which has been the great salvation of my life. I have an in tray and an out tray, but a pending tray. All the things you can't make up your mind about, or you don't want to act on now, you put into that pending tray. And you could have it, no doubt, in an equivalent on your email account. Just put the things there to be acted on. Most of them will disappear. But if you get into the tendency of trying to solve problems straight away all the time, you'll live in a stress-filled world. So the suspended judgment. The second is also a trinity, ex-trinity person. I'll see if any of you know who this was. This was a famous scientist who worked in the building where social anthropology is now and SPS is. And one day a young scientist came rushing up to him and said, I've discovered this fantastic thing. It's absolutely wonderful. I started going on at him. He said, just quieten down, quieten down. Young man, unless you can explain, instead of the way you explained to me, unless you can explain what you've discovered to the barmaid in the Eagle pub, which presumably he thought was the lowest form of life, no point in it. It's not worth anything. Do any of you know who that was?
Right?
Is it Walter
not
Quick? No. Anyone else?
Einstein says something similar.
Not Einstein.
Was it the guy who split the atom?
Sorry?
Was it the guy who split the atom?
Yeah. Yeah. Ernest Rutherford. Ernest Rutherford. So basically it's the same as I wrote up on the board, Einstein's remark. Make things as simple as possible, but not simpler. And that applies to all your life as well as your work. Just simplify. I'm afraid Marilyn Stratton and I disagree on this, because Marilyn's view is make everything as complex as possible, if not more complex. Complexify, which is a cry of French sociologists, as you know, also. Anyway, the third one is an unknown Don. And this is near to my heart. He was asked about retirement. He'd been retired for a year or two. And what was it like? This is probably an Oxford Don. And he thought for a bit and he said, well, it's all right, but I do miss the sabbaticals. Sabbatical is the seventh leave we got. And the moral of that story is that, and this is what I'm about to face, unless you have rests, unless you have breaks, unless you have changes all the time, life becomes very dreary. So in an iron way through my undergraduate and postgraduate years, made sure I took chunks of time off, either 5 minutes every hour, 1 hour every 5 hours, weekends, holidays, and so on, just to get that contrast and to get the rest. And so my wife has bought me a boat and she's going to make sure that I spend lots of time just drifting up and down the Cannes without a computer. Just so that I have mini sabbaticals all the time. I'm having one tomorrow, by the way. The next one I think I've told many of you, but I think it is worth repeating, which is Micawber's Law. I'm sure most of you know Micawber's Law. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, 19 and sixpence. Result, happiness. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £20. 0 and 6. Result, misery. It's not the Micawber's Law of economics, that they're of time. I mean, I know it's easy for me to say this, but it took me about 30 years to realize that to be happy in Cambridge, the way to do that is to always have a little more time than you think you're going to need. If you're walking from this college to, say, SPS, and you know it takes 5 minutes, allow yourself 7 minutes, because you're bound to meet a friend, or something is going to happen, and if you're always rushing and you're always slightly behind and you're always deadlines and so on, and Cambridge is hugely pressured, I mean, it applies to everything else. If you're going on holiday, take slightly less books than you think you could read, and then you'll read them all and be happy. If you take a big pile of books, come back with half of them unread, you'll be unhappy. So it's something like Marshall Solomon's in philosophy, but which many of you have heard about. So Micawber's Law. Another one which I may or may not have inflicted on you, a lot of mine are from Einstein. Unless an idea starts off as absurd, there is no chance for it. I tried this on scientists, and some of them like it and some don't. They don't know what I mean by absurd. It basically means and you're encouraged to do this in your supervisions and so on, if you spend the whole of your life trying to prove very small and insignificant and obvious things, it will be unexciting for you and unexciting for all your friends and everyone else. Try out crazy ideas. I once interviewed someone who worked with Crick for many years, Sidney Brenner, and they just spent their whole time flying back and forth crazy ideas. 99% of them didn't work, but the 1% that did got them Nobel Prizes of various kinds. Just really worth being absurd at times. Another one is Solvitur Ambulando. Do any of you know Latin? Times. I failed my Latin from the age of 11 onwards. But anyway, I believe it means it is solved by walking. Almost any problem is solved by walking. I think Einstein said the legs are the machines of the mind, or some such phrase. If you have a problem of any kind, go for a walk. And almost certainly, especially if you can go for a favorite walk, by the end of the walk, the problem will have been solved. Max Weber had this view too. He said, none of my theories have come out of my sitting at my desk. They've always come leaving my desk, going for a walk, and then the problem is solved. Try it out, okay? Another one, which, and I'll just give you two more. One is, this is a very, well, those who know his work, I think he's one of the greatest scientists ever. He was another Cambridge scientist called Darcy Wentworth Thompson, and he wrote about forms in biology. But he also wrote a novel about Cambridge, and I really like this description of one of the Cambridge dons he knew. He says, he was most of the dons, he said, were of the cobra kind. He really meant a python, I think, but anyway, you know, the snake, the cobra. They had swallowed their intellectual goat early in life and were passing through the years of inactivity requisite for digestion. Now, pythons swallow an animal and then sort of sit there 20 years and then, or just a month or two, and then the animal is digested inside their stomach. The point of this really is that if you look around the people who teach you and the people around you, you'll find that they're divided into some who are very active and do a great deal and publish and have a really joyous life. And there are quite a lot who you get the sense that they feel that they're not really doing what they have the potential to do. And that's very often to do with the fact that it's very easy in any form of life, and if any of you become academics, to swallow a large thing like a PhD thesis early on in life. And then the rest of your life, you're slowly digesting it in the odd article, book, and so on, and becoming more and more frightened of going somewhere else and doing something different. I always like to think of academics, like my great patron, Jack Goody, as like slash and burn farmers, moving around onto new subjects. It's from the interaction of our minds with something new and fresh. Never do anything for more than 3 or 4 years, if possible, and then do something different. It won't get better, it will start getting worse. It will start going down, like my part one lectures. Luckily, I just got out of them in time. But after about 4 or 5 years, they begin to go down. And it's the same with intellectual ventures, artistic ventures. Move on to new challenges, because the energy comes out of the exploration of something new that you haven't yet encountered. So, perhaps I'll move on to the last one, which is to be obstinate. I've been starting writing my autobiography, and I realised that I was totally nondescript little boy. The one thing there was about me was that I was extremely obstinate. I hated losing games. I burst into tears, and no one could console me for losing games. Also, rugby and other things like that. I was a tiny little boy, and I threw myself at these huge boys, got kicked into the mud. But everyone said, oh, he does try hard, he's really obstinate. Be obstinate, and to show what obstinacy means, I'll just read you an account of a fellow of my college, King's, in the later 19th century, from a lovely book by Benson, As We Were, if anybody wanted to see Cambridge a few years ago. Perhaps this is a point to plug my new book. I sent last week my book called Reflections on Cambridge to my Indian publisher, and so it'll be out the next term. So have a look for it and ask for it in the bookshop, even if you don't intend to buy it. Okay? Reflections on Cambridge, and it has this little story in it. This fellow of King's, probably living in the rooms in the kids' building where I live, he had lived since his earliest manhood in a set of fellows' rooms, from which he never emerged except in the evening gloaming. He then shuffled out onto the big lawn, you know, the lawn at the back, with a stick in his hand, and he prodded with it at the worms in the grass, muttering to himself, "Ah, damn ye, you hain't got me yet." And after this physical refreshment, he returned to his room until next same hour, next day. So what I want to say is, if after your wonderful time here, and I hope you come back to Cambridge, though it will be a strange feeling, you'll feel like ghosts, as I describe in my book, but you'll come back, and one of the ghosts you'll see is an old gentleman with no hair at all there by that time, going over King's Lawn, prodding, and then you'll know who it is, and then come and say hello. Thank you very much indeed.